Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
It's because you can see how they will take their baton and hit people that were literally just standing still. They were hitting people with batons. I think at one point, like, they moved a white old lady aside to then, like, use their baton on a brown person. It was really, it's like Montana is they are.
I should laugh. That's so stereotypical. It's so stereotypical.
This entire process has been stereotypical. The idea that a trans person calling them out is enough for them to lose their collective minds, drop an entire legislative day because they didn't even meet yesterday. They were just scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. And then the next day, they do this and they like kick her off the floor. It's very stereotypical.
Hey, Aaron, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing is more important.
It has been a day, it has been a week, it has been a month, it has been a year.
Oh, wow. Everyone, I have the incredible Aaron Reed on the show, activist extraordinaire, here to tell us about the fiasco going down in Montana. Before I start that, I should give you 2 seconds to plug any websites you want to do that first.
Of course, yeah. So just let everybody know, I am an independent journalist and activist. I cover LGBTQ legislation as it moves all over the United States. Currently tracking 515 bills, and I have read every single one of them this year. I write about all of this at aaroninthemorning.com. That's my newsletter. It reaches tens of thousands of people who are generally politicians, reporters, activists that are focused in on this issue. So if you want to better understand them, you can go there. And then I also just report on this on TikTok, on Twitter, on all the social media outlets so that I can get the information out to people about this wave of legislation moving all over the United States. And then also, as it pertains to what we're probably going to talk about, I am Representative Zoe Zephyr of Montana's girlfriend and supporter, and watching what just occurred there. That was unfortunately two aspects of my life that had to meet there, where I was reporting on a major issue that was going on trans topics, but then also reporting on my girlfriend.
That's so powerful, too. I should also add to that list of I'd say accolades that you are an incredible resource for us cis folks, because whenever anyone in the, like, you know, the I want to be someone who helps or an activist or how can I participate, I'm always like, go to Aaron's Twitter. That you'll see it all there. Like, no one she just covers this stuff with such great coverage. Like, it's absolutely incredible. So thank you so much for all the hard work you do.
I really, really appreciate that. I try to make this as approachable for everybody, for cis people, for trans people, for young people. That's a big reason why I did what I did with TikTok, is because I know that I'm reaching people that don't know that much about the democratic process, that don't know about how to make your voice heard in all of the ways possible. And so that's just what I try to do. And I'm glad that that's getting across. So thank you.
Why don't we start with, can you give everyone a quick primer to what exactly is going on in Montana and why it's so important and why they should be paying attention as the focal point of this, let's say, war on trans people that's taking place in the US?
Of course. So I track anti-trans legislation all over the United States, and Montana has been particularly rough this year to follow. We've seen everything from drag bans, one of which just passed through a conference committee today, one of the most harmful drag bans. Like, it is just entirely drag in public. We've seen healthcare bans, gender-affirming care bans for transgender youth. So this would be things like puberty blockers, hormone therapy. We have seen banning of books. We've seen, banning of using students' pronouns in school, bathroom bans, everything. And it seems like Montana has just been very harsh in how it treats its transgender residents this year. But, like, conversely to that, Montana did elect two trans and non-binary representatives this year. Representative Zoe Zephyr is my partner, as a trans woman, and then SJ Howell, Representative Howell, who is a non-binary person. And so they have been able to speak out on the harms that all of these bills cause. And after speaking out on the harms that the gender-affirming care ban caused, she upset Republicans in how powerfully she spoke. She essentially said that if you vote for this bill, you will have blood on your hands because of the fact that she herself had gotten a letter from a transgender, young transgender teenager who was watching one of the hearings and attempted to take her life with it on the screen. Thank God she survived. She wrote a letter to Representative Zephyr about what happened. And so today, after silencing her for 3 or 4 days in a row, they didn't allow her to speak on any bill. She punched in. They refused to recognize her. Speaker said that it was his prerogative. Her constituent.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
And all of Montanans showed up. They packed the gallery. And whenever she punched in her light and they just moved on and didn't allow her to speak, they all started yelling, "Let her speak." She raised her non-functional microphone in solidarity. And then today they just kicked her off of the floor for the remainder of the House session this year.
So we were watching that live yesterday, and I saw the police on the upper deck as you saw the protesters chanting, just moving around. And then, like, I couldn't see it from my angle, but some of them were actually physically accosting them. Like, when you see it on the news report later, like, they're using force. Am I wrong in that, or?
You're not wrong. Actually, if you look at, people have been looking over the old footage, and, you know, I suspect that the reason why the Republicans today didn't release footage of what was going on and try to use that in their presentation is because you can see how they will take their baton and hit people that were literally just standing still. They were hitting people with batons. I think at one point, like, they moved a white old lady aside to then, like, use their baton on a brown person. It was really, you know, it's like Montana is they are.
I should laugh. That's so stereotypical. It's so stereotypical.
This entire process has been stereotypical. The idea that a trans person calling them out is enough for them to lose their collective minds, drop an entire legislative day because they didn't even meet yesterday. They were just scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. And then the next day, they do this and they, like, kick her off the floor. It's very stereotypical.
Maybe I should back up a bit. What exactly was the bill in the first place, and how does it affect trans people directly?
Of course. So the bill was a categorical ban on gender affirming care for transgender youth. So if you're under 18, you cannot obtain hormone therapy, puberty blockers. People that were already on hormone therapy and puberty blockers would be pulled off. So let's say you're a 17-year-old transgender girl who has developed and who knows, everybody knows you as a girl. They would pull you off of that hormone therapy. You'd grow facial hair. You'd get all that stuff. And that's a very, for your viewers who may not be intimately familiar with transgender medicine and gender affirming care, it's a very traumatizing process to have your medication pulled off of you. It physically sucks, and then also mentally knowing that, like, you're about to have to, you thought you've escaped all this, and you're about to have to go through all of that. It hurts, and you know, there are, having spoken to many families of trans youth in Montana, these are well-adjusted people. They are happy. They are generally very active in their class and in their communities. And we know from national research and from the medical organizations that there's good research backing up this care. But ultimately, Montana, they were taking a vote to categorically ban this care, no matter what, just pull everybody off and that's it. And Representative Zephyr got up there, and she actually, like, her speech was played widely. It was a really powerful speech overall. But I think that perhaps because she maybe got a lot of press off of that, like, people knew, people were reporting on how bad the bill was. I think that they took offense to that.
If someone isn't, like, fully aware, in terms of, like, is that one of the only bills that's taking place in Montana right now? Or is Montana one of the places where they're trying to remove all gender affirming care, like a lot of other places?
Yeah,
because it seems to be like this is just the entry point when I see these.
Well, yeah. So, like, now we're in this new front where Missouri, you know, essentially banned virtually all gender affirming care. I know many people in Missouri that are being pulled off their medication as adults. Texas is moving to do the same thing. They just passed a bill today in the Senate. Montana has not done that, but Montana has some other bills that we haven't seen anywhere else. It's actually really ironic. The first time Zoe, Representative Zephyr, sat there and punched in on a bill, the first time that she punched in after her speech and the first time that she was silenced was on a bill. It was SB 458. And this bill basically removes trans people from all definitions of sex through 40 areas of code. And so it bans gender markers. It bans, like, for trans people, bans changing your gender marker on your driver's license, on your birth certificate, your death certificate. It bans things like, it bans bathrooms in some circumstances. There's like, there are these weird things that it does in trying to define sex as absolutely binary and excluding intersex people, and that it then allows intersex people to be targeted under certain crimes and not prosecuted. It had all of these ramifications, and like, they got a fiscal note that it was going to cost $3 billion to implement.
Oh my God.
And it was just, it was ridiculous. And so it's really ironic how on a bill that erases transgender people from 40 sections of law, she punched in and they erased her voice from speaking on the floor. And that's where this all started. They continued to not recognize her every time her light was on.
Am I wrong in assuming that this percentage of people directly affected by this, and this is not that it's not important, this is more that it feels like they're fixated on something that affects such a small percentage of the population, right? Like, in terms of sports bans and going so far to ban kids from sports, sometimes in some states it's like, so three kids can't play on the sports team now. Like, that's, what have you achieved?
I'll do you one further. It not only targets a very small percentage of people, it targets them in a way that affects all cisgender people as well. I'll give you a really good example. Let's talk about drag bans, because Montana may be the only state. Tennessee's drag ban is currently paused in court. Montana might be the only state that has a drag ban that passes. And this drag ban, the way that it's worded is you can't dress as the other gender using exaggerated clothing, makeup, signifiers, etc. And so, like, they just banned hair rock. They just banned glam rock. They just banned pro wrestling. They banned clowns. Like,
they banned Rudy Giuliani.
There you go. And it's whenever we think about how these laws get implemented and the history that these laws have, you go back to the pre-1970s Stonewall era, before we had Stonewall, before we had Pride, and we had drag bands back then. That's how they went into these areas, these bars, and arrested the patrons. They used these things called three articles of clothing laws, where you had to be wearing three articles of clothing that match your assigned gender at birth, or then you would be arrested as defying their drag laws. And we're seeing a return to that, not just in law, but also in the social commentary from the Republican and right-wing thought leaders. So, you know, we just saw Ben Shapiro yesterday. I don't know if you saw the video from Ben Shapiro, but Ben Shapiro came out and said that he believes that communities should be able to pass ordinances banning men from wearing dresses and feminine clothing. And then he added, maybe we can let women wear pants.
Oh, how kind. How nice of him.
Thank you, Ben.
That's so wild, because, like, Michael Knowles is a drag performer. Steven Crowder is a drag performer. Like, every single one of them is a drag performer.
The governor of Tennessee.
Right? Yeah. Like, they're all drag performers. Wow. That's so, like, could you not watch Mrs. Doubtfire at a midnight screening?
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because yes, Mrs. Doubtfire would likely be banned under this bill. Also, one of the biggest opponents to these bills has actually been theater unions and theater associations, because what you'll have is, like, Shakespeare, for instance, one third of all Shakespeare has drag in it.
Oh yeah.
Broadway musicals, several of them have drag in it.
And they them pronouns, we should talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
The most dreaded of all pronouns.
Exactly. And so, you know, in Tennessee, when this law was heard, you know, the judge in Tennessee was basically laughed them out of the room. They were like, this is clearly, like, this is focused, targeted restriction of speech, like First Amendment. And, you know, we're learning that, you know, the far right and Republicans, they'll claim to care about the First Amendment, and then in reality, they'll just literally kill the First Amendment for everything that doesn't match them. Then we can even see on Twitter with good old boy Elon Musk, you know, coming in claiming that he's a First Amendment champion, and look at us now. I mean, I haven't seen Twitter so silenced in years.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So four cases like that are obviously pretty extreme. People, like, are what's the sentiment in Montana towards a lot of this? Is it just so far right, or is it, like, a lot of people, like, I get this feeling that normies especially kind of see this as going too far, like, just watching people shoot up Bud Light cans and run them over with trucks and like lose their minds all over the place. Like, in Montana, is there a sense that like isn't democracy more important? Like, don't they want smaller government? Isn't that what they always preach about?
That's the sentiment that I get too. And, you know, I, whenever I was reporting on the protesters yesterday, I saw, and I saw interviews, and I had spoken to a couple of people who had basically said, like, they were asked, I saw this one old couple, for instance, and they were asked, like, do you know about, like, all the anti-trans bills that are being run here in the legislature? And they're like, no, I really don't know anything about this. I'm just here to support Representative Zephyr. I don't think that it's right what they're doing. Oh, and I think that, exactly. And, like, I think that they overplayed their hand. They overstepped the Montana GOP. And that much is clear. You can see in the way that the governor kind of couched his statement. Like, he didn't really release a strong supportive statement of what the Montana House is doing. He basically said, the House will handle the House's business. Like, did not... It's like, I want no part of this, please. and like a lot of the news coverage, you know, a lot of the local news coverage. In fact, we saw, I know you said you saw like the protests and stuff. I don't know if you saw the press conference that was yesterday, but Speaker Regeer came out and gave a press conference that was 40 seconds long. And it was literally just him yelling at the media for how they're covering this. And then immediately he canceled the floor session yesterday, walked into the offices, closed the door, and tried to get the sergeant at arms to clear all the press out. But in reality, you can only clear the press out in Montana if you're about to have a House session. And since he canceled the House session, like all the reporters were like, no, this is BS. We're going to stay here and ask you questions.
That's awesome. Oh, well, good on that.
Yeah. So I don't think it's playing well in Montana. And, you know, Montana, they just did redistricting. And so next election cycle, like the GOP is poised to lose a lot of seats. And then this is happening. This is how they're closing things off. I don't think that, you know, I think that no matter what you feel about like trans rights, no matter what you feel about what's going on there, an assault on democracy itself is, I think, unanimously something that most people don't agree with.
Before I get to obviously the pivotal moment of that, I wanted to ask about the other woman in play who's been allowed to speak, but seems to be what some describe as a TERF. She's telling the story, was utilizing the story. Unfortunately, it's tragic, so I want to do a content warning, but to say that she was describing the suicidal ideation of her own child, but then trying to relate that to trans rights and then being allowed to speak in this setting. How is that being justified, both by the GOP and other people witnessing what's happening, when one person has been silenced and the other person who's not an expert in any way, shape, or form on these topics suddenly being given the microphone?
You know, it's not being justified, not in a sufficient manner. And I think that they're just glossing over it. In fact, we saw today in Representative Zephyr's hearing, Representative Wendy Boy, who stood up, Native American representative, who said that, like, I've been here for 20 years in various forms in the legislature. I saw Republicans and Democrats sometimes nearly go fist to cuffs on the House floor and have to be pulled apart from each other. I've seen pounding on desks. I've seen breaking desks before.
Wow.
And this was not the punishment offered. And for a trans woman who did nothing but stand up and raise her microphone that was non-functional, they're removing her from the floor for the rest of the year. It's clear. Like, I think anybody with two eyes can see what's going on there. And it's really clear, like, how the party line vote, like, it's really clear what's happening there.
Mm-hmm. That image has now become so iconic. I see it shared over like all this mainstream media, and it's just like it's very heartening to see. Do you think that is helping now that there is global attention on this, and this has become this kind of like fight about free speech more than it is simply about trans rights?
I think that these are connected fights, and you know, this is something that I have spoken about for a few years now whenever I give interviews, but how a lot of these fights are necessarily connected to one another. I actually just recently wrote an article on this topic. And you know, we have reproductive healthcare rights. Those are intrinsically linked to transgender rights. We have rights to vote and be part of an elected democracy. You know, whenever you see essentially fascism, and I'm going to call this what it is, see fascism start to target, do their initial approach on minorities. And we're seeing this in state legislatures across the country right now. We saw, for instance, in Tennessee, the removal of the two Black legislators and the keeping of the white legislator that participated in the protest in Tennessee. Yeah. We just saw the censuring of Representative Turner, Mari Turner, in Oklahoma, also a non-binary representative who themselves spoke out on a bill, and then also who themselves essentially allowed a protester to sit in their office. They were censured. We just saw what happened with Representative Zephyr, and not 10 minutes after they did that to Representative Zephyr and her constituency, we just got word that Senator Hunt in Nebraska, who has been fighting day in, day out to basically, they've had the legislature there in a filibuster for like 7 weeks now. She just got word that she is now being investigated for a conflict of interest because she has a trans son.
What?
Yeah. I mean, this is GOP supermajorities right now being led by like Freedom Caucuses. They are exhibiting fascist behavior targeting a minority population. And I mean, that's what it is. And it's terrifying. You know, you see it happening in the States, and it has to be called out for what it is. It has to be confronted directly.
What's the next step for Zoe?
You know, I've spoken to Zoe. From everything that I've spoken to her about, she intends to continue representing her constituency, intends to continue speaking out. I think that personally, and this is nothing, no info from her, but I think that whenever she does go back to her district, her people love her because they know that she's willing to stand up for them. And I think that overall, her voice is going to be valuable moving forward for her state. And I think that I don't think that the GOP in Montana did themselves any favors today.
What's the best method going forward to be able to reverse or destroy some of these bills, especially the one that just passed in Montana?
Yeah, so I like to think about a two-front sort of tactic here that I always talk about anytime I get asked this for all these bills. On one front, you know, we do need the courts to step in, and a lot of these bills are blatantly unconstitutional, and we will fight them in the courts and in the legislative chambers where we call our representatives and engage in the democratic process. But also, there's another track, and that other track is local action with people and forming community organizations and contributing to each other's well-being. You know, the LGBTQ community, we've been marginalized for decades now. This isn't the first time that we've been pushed to the margins, but we have learned how to thrive in the margins by forming solidarity and social cohesion in small groups. And whenever these harmful bills get passed and they take away your healthcare, they take away your art, they take away your right to representation, a lot of times the way that you get through that is by using your local community resources and basically forming those strong groups. You know, LGBTQ people have shared medication before many times in the past. LGBTQ people have stood up for each other. They've raised bail funds for being arrested for drag crimes and such. And I think that moving forward, strengthening your local organizations, so your local LGBT orgs, if your listeners are like, I wonder what I can do, go to Equality Federation, look up your state LGBT org and your local LGBT orgs. If you are looking at like mutual aid organizations, that's a good thing to support. And just making sure that these local orgs are really strong moving forward because they're doing the work day in, day out.
Where should we also be focusing on the next big bill to almost be passing, where people should be concentrating on retweeting, talking about?
I think right now, Florida is what I'm watching. Florida, mm-hmm. There's a lot happening in Florida. There is a particularly heinous law in Florida that may pass. It's a bathroom ban for trans adults. And essentially what it says is that if you are trans and you're in a bathroom and a cisgender person is uncomfortable with you, they can basically point at the door and say, leave. And if you don't leave, then you are guilty of a crime. And so it creates literally like the second class of citizenship within the state of Florida around bathrooms. And like it gives every cisgender person the authority to essentially demand that a trans person leave.
You know what's so wild about that is what you're describing is like the nightmare that right-wingers always talk about happening to them. It's like 1984 cancel culture, doublethink, we're going to be living this dystopian future. But it's like you were trying to craft this dystopian future in real time just to affect trans people or just to affect minorities, it feels like.
I mean, they just engaged in the ultimate cancel culture by silencing a representative for a week and then kicking her out while they had a supermajority. Like, they can get all of their bills through. It's not like she could stop anything. Like, all she was doing was talking, and they're just like, nope, we got to kill that. That can't go on.
That's so wild. Is there legal repercussions that that Zoe can take, or maybe not Zoe, but you know, I think the ACLU is already talking about this. Sorry, I don't want to get into
that. I've seen the ACLU talk about it. I've heard ideas around that, and I guess on that front, just stay tuned. We'll see if there's any legal repercussions to it.
Fair enough. One of the other things I want to ask you about is kind of the online, because you were just bringing up Elon Musk and how obviously, you know, free speech has changed under Space Karen and his reign of terror on Twitter. How are you finding the because you're a very prominent like activist who I guess provides a lot of information, obviously, that puts you into a lot of danger doing so. And I know with things getting as horrifying as they are, you know, Jake, whatever his fucking, I don't care what his name is, but just, you know, straight up saying genocidal rhetoric online, that kind of stuff. Is there a better place for people to be doing that kind of activism outside of these rather dangerous spaces right now, or a better place where people should be migrating towards? Because I think that's a big thing, is a lot of people who want to help are also like, well, if I can't find Aaron on Twitter, where do I, you know, where do I turn?
And I think a lot of activists are struggling with that right now, and we're trying to feel out the alternatives that are shaping up. You know, I've seen things like Blue Sky. I use Substack Notes as an alternative, and like my Substack, the reason why I started my Substack was a year ago, I saw that Elon Musk was going to buy Twitter, and I'm like, I need to get off this platform. I need another way to reach my audience directly. And so what drew me to Substack was that A, I could write long form content, but also B, I could take my audience wherever I go. Like you can move your email list to any other provider. I can go to Medium. I can go to anything else. And so that was my way of like saying, okay, I'm not going to be beholden to like an algorithmic feed for my activism. But, you know, I still do work on Instagram, on TikTok, et cetera. They all have problems. I think that all social media does, but Twitter right now is a special hell for a lot of people. And yes, I have gotten many death threats and many just horrifying things. And that continues to grow, I think, just on the platform as a whole. But moving forward, like if I do see another outlet for me, I will move there. I am considering, for instance, recording more long form YouTube content in the future and doing stuff on Blue Sky. And there's a number of other avenues that I'm exploring.
Blue Sky is Jack Dorsey's new one?
I think so. And yeah. I haven't been able to explore it much, but from what I've heard that it's like kind of is like old Twitter. So we'll see how it goes.
Oh, cool. I also wanted to ask you, because obviously you're pretty well versed in LGBTQ+ culture and rainbow washing and stuff. What are your thoughts on this weird schism happening right now where right wingers seem to be like aggressively turning on corporate brands, be they Disney or obviously Bud Light? We've all seen the wild times that goes on there. But say for Disney and stuff, because personally for me, I as you know, a fellow LGBTQ+ member, have always kind of been against rainbow washing. I'm just against the hypocrisy. That's it. That's the only part of it I don't like. I don't like the hypocrisy. But now that I see it's forming this weird shield at a time where everyone's going after trans people, and then now everyone in Florida is kind of also going after Disney. So I'm kind of like, maybe, I don't know, let them fight. I was just curious your thought on it.
I'm kind of, especially with Budweiser and like Bud Light and stuff, like for them in particular, I am definitely of the mind of let them fight. They donate more to anti-LGBT politicians than almost any other company. They are constantly donating to right wing.
Really? Stuff, I didn't know that.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Whenever I heard they were fighting, I was just like, let it happen. I am not going to step in between them. Just go, like finish it off, because I want no part in that. There was this big campaign last year run by, I don't know which org ran it, but it was all about like Anheuser-Busch and how they like really support a lot of the anti-trans politicians. And so,
interesting. Whatever. Okay, I was gonna say I knew Disney
and DeSantis is hilarious though.
Oh, because they used to fund him, didn't they? Disney used to be a big contributor to DeSantis before they went to this whole wokening or what do you
and then, whatever and you then, and then they announced like a pride night at Disney land, I think it was. It's funny to see them go back and forth on it. I'm also one that doesn't really like the whole rainbow washing corporate logos thing. But I mean, you know, like what I really want from companies, like I don't care what you put on your logo. Like I really want inclusive healthcare benefits. I really want paid family leave. I really want, you know, really good policies around these things. And that's what I think a lot of us care about.
What's been your thoughts on all of the horrifyingly bad things happening to bad people lately? Or are you allowed to comment on that? Sorry, I don't want to get your work in trouble.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, I don't...
So between Matt Walsh, Stephen Crowder, I don't know. It's just been it feels like queer Christmas over the last couple of weeks, you know, just day after day.
No, you're right.
Tucker Carlson. Yeah.
No, so like I have seen more harm from Tucker Carlson and Matt Walsh than almost anybody else and Michael Knowles. And to see Tucker Carlson get sort of deplatformed by Fox, I think people are underestimating how big of an impact that has on the general LGBTQ discourse, because to have him on the screen every night to every person that always has Fox News on their TV 24/7, that was painful. I mean, I saw for Vanderbilt Children's Hospital, for instance, I saw him put the pictures of all of the hospital executives up so that they would get death threats the following week. We saw Boston Children's Hospital get bomb threats. And then he came on and said, it's not the people that are calling in the threats that are the criminals. It's Boston Children's Hospital that's the criminals. And like, that's the kind of stuff that we saw egged on national TV every single day. And so to see that no longer part of the discourse, like from Fox News, that's just going to make me happy no matter what.
Yeah, same. There's been a couple questions from the chat. Do you mind fielding some questions?
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay, so someone wanted to know, is there a possibility that she could get voted out of the House? I believe referring to Zoe.
No, I don't think so. I think that that Zoe is going to be firmly in that House for years to come.
Okay, that's awesome. That's great news. Someone was asking, do you have a YouTube channel? Because you mentioned it earlier. What exactly is that?
Oh, so like I don't have a YouTube channel yet. I don't do long form YouTube yet. What I do is I post clips from hearings onto my YouTube. But the only reason I do that is to get them onto my Substack so that they auto so that they can play on my newsletters. But people do actually follow my channel on YouTube for just the hearing clips themselves.
Someone found it. It's at Aaron in the Morning.
good job, person. Because I don't know the name of my own YouTube channel. It's literally just like my clip drop-off channel.
Someone else is asking, your earrings are lovely. Where can I get them?
I'm glad that they noticed them because these are actually Zoe's earrings. And I don't know where they come from, but I wore them in solidarity with her today.
Oh, that's so cute.
She left them at my house last time that she visited.
Oh, that's really cute. Someone else wants to know, what's the football photo from?
Which one, football?
There's a picture of the two of you apparently at like a football game or something. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That was the... hold on. She's going to kill me for this. Yeah, okay, University of Montana. I wanted to make sure it wasn't like Montana State. not from Montana, so I don't want to get like killed for this. So that was University of Montana. It was like a championship game for like Division II or something. And I'm not into football. She's not really into football, but we were both invited to the press box there because she had just been elected. And so, you know, we showed up and we got on the field. And, you know, honestly, it was kind of cool to be, you know, two trans women down on the football field of University of Montana, just doing our thing.
That's really, really cute. Someone else is asking, and I wanted to reiterate this, what are some of the things going on that are giving you hope? Because I actually like asking this of a lot of activists, because usually they have some bright spots that we may not have seen yet or heard about. So what are some of the aspects, I guess, in both the legislation or just in the movement in general that have been very positive?
I'm really glad that that person asked that question, because this is something that I always love to answer. And I've got a few things that I usually talk about. Number one, I am so happy that there are so many states right now that are actually moving to pass positive legislation. We see places like Minnesota, New Jersey, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, California, Illinois, all these places are passing laws that essentially say, if you are leaving these other states that are targeting you and you make it to our borders, we will not extradite you. We will not subpoena your records, allow them to subpoena your kids' medical records in the state. We're not going to allow them to take you back. We're not going to allow a non-custodial parent to detransition them and like pull them back to a state where they're going to be detransitioned. And so like these laws are giving me hope. But I think that the real hope that I'm getting is from Gen Z and from how active they are and how accepting they are in this issue. You know, I see them come out of schools and like do school walkouts. I see massive protests. This Trans Day of Visibility this last year was the biggest Trans Day of Visibility that I have ever seen in terms of massive protests all over the world. And they were mainly led by an organization of young Gen Z people. And they were just organizing young people themselves. And then lastly, I'll say I come from a very rural Louisiana county, parish is what they call them in Louisiana. And I remember growing up as a trans girl, 9, 10 years old, and I was relentlessly bullied. And I remember how hard that was for me. And I wasn't able to like ever fully transition in Louisiana as a kid. And then just recently, several months ago, I got a message from a transgender girl who goes to school 20 minutes from where I grew up. And she said, "Hey, Erin, I'm a young trans girl. I'm 17 years old. I really love your work. And I just wanted to let you know that my school voted me to the homecoming court." and I cried, and like to know that there is a trans girl not only being accepted by her school, but celebrated in the place that I grew up where that was not a thing, and like allowed to sit on the back of her car with her dad and driven around the football stadium, waving at everybody and getting cheered. Like that was too much. That's what gives me hope, because I know that no matter what these laws do up there, like the people are moving forward and the people are changing, and that's how we win.
I don't know if I can ask another question after that. So, you know, it was pretty funny when Matt Walsh got hacked, right? He's a sassy shooter. Heartwarming. Philly's swelling my heart. Beautiful. Yes. That's an absolutely beautiful story. Aaron, where can people find you?
AaronInTheMorning.com, and you can also search me at Aaron in the Morning on Instagram, TikTok. Twitter is at Aaron in the Morn, no ing, because it is shorter on Twitter, and that's where you can find me moving forward.
If you want one last heartwarming thing, someone in the chat called Non-Binary Superpowers says, tell Aaron she's iconic and her OG YouTube content was empowering, and I wouldn't have been here without that. Thank you from 2000-year-old me.
Yeah. Aw, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Aaron, both for the work you do for this interview. And honestly, it's like I said, you are my go-to when like cis people are like, how can I find out about all the things that are happening? I'm just like, go to Aaron in the Morning. She has it covered.
Absolutely. Anytime you.
Oh no, you glitched out. I don't know if you're there. You can hear me. You're frozen and silent. Oh, and now it's double me. Oh, that was weird. Okay. Hold on. Hey everyone, please, if you haven't already, go to, Twitter, I think, at Aaron in the Morn. Let me double check that, but I'm sure. Yes, twitter.com/AaronInTheMorn. You can also go to Ko-Fi, that's ko-fi.com/AaronInTheMorn. If you want booking and content, Aaron Reed writes, and AaronInTheMorning.com if you want to find all the rest of her socials and all her activism. She's obviously doing incredibly, incredibly difficult and hard work, and it's so very necessary. So Aaron is a hero. And yeah, you should too. That's all I can really say about that.
Do you enjoy the SERPs but prefer not to have to use your eyeballs? Many are saying this. Well, we've got the solution for you. It's the SERP Times in podcast form, available on most major podcasting networks now. If you enjoy it, please consider leaving a good review and feedback, because it really helps the show out, apparently, and it's free, just like the podcast.
To our gods, Xander Corvus and Peyton L. Juice, we shall spend many a generations building mighty cathedrals in your honor. To our monarch, Tom Spiker, we are but your oafish jesters, here to offer you a laugh at any opportunity. To our brave knights of the round table, Rachel Kay, Izzy Solidarity, Victoria Bell, Sebastian Demel, Mark Harmon, Benji Arnie, Scary Earth Human, Tony, DM Rivera, Resident Scarecrow, Sir Nickus, Cheryl Alvarez, Ruby Kelly, Brandon, Words Greenwood, Everything Important, Hegbert Celine, Matthew Scarborough, Stellar Vision, Ariane McCarthy, Doug Cady, Daniel Sutton, Jenna Tao, Dark Puppy, Quiet One 85, Anna Loves Riley, Omni, Riley and Anna, Poodlehawk, Multi Mondi, Trevbot EXE, Brian Ephraim, Anthropophojack, Catherine, Ramon Acosta, Nkosin, Ralph Parler, Violent Orchard, Political Puppy, La Media Panza, Todd Buckingham, and Todd Lajeunesse. We salute our valiant heroes off to fight injustice everywhere.